Welcome to the Exit 68 podcast with your co-hosts, Matt, Justin, and Ben.
UConn is going to the Final Four. Houston, Texas. UConn Nation's going to be there. It's the best fucking time of the year, and it's even better because the Huskies are back where they belong, on top of the college basketball world, back in the news cycle. I think everyone in their mother is finally kind of starting to figure out that, hey, maybe this team is pretty good here, because the road here shows you exactly that. I mean, you talk about these last four games that led us to this point. Their closest game was 15 against St. Mary's. They won every single game by about 20 points, beating Rick Pitino, Randy Bennett, Muss, and Mark Few in the process. They made two very good teams quit completely in Arkansas and Gonzaga. And really digging into that, Gonzaga was one of the top offensive teams in the country, held them to 54 points. And we saw a team in Gonzaga who in the second half of that game on offense looked like they did not even want to be out there on the floor. I am joined here by my good friend Doug, who knows ball and could not be more excited to.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem. Couldn't be more excited to break down these games. Obviously, I think like the rest of the UConn fans here, all eyes are on Miami right now. But before that, I think we kind of have to talk about the Arkansas and Gonzaga game and kind of what happened in the Sweet 16 Elite Eight rounds to get us to this point. Doug, very pumped to have you on. Just dealt with a little bit of a flight situation with Delta, which I know a lot of UConn fans are happy you got a new flight. But Delta's really trying to fuck us, huh?
Yeah, I've seen, I think, two or three of the same thing on Twitter. I know someone posted in our group the other day, but Delta, not good heading down to the tournament here. Luckily, I got another flight within about 20 minutes of the cancellation notice, but it was about a 10-minute period of pure fear there where I thought I was going to have to fly in right before game time Saturday. I mean, there was never a doubt as to going, but definitely don't want to get that the day before you're leaving for the Final Four.
I mean, you could always drive down with Sweeney. I'm sure he's looking for extra people. And, you know, that's obviously worst case scenario, but there are ways to get there. So looking forward to getting down to Houston. Hopefully UConn Nation shows up. You know, the rest of the three schools there, in my opinion, don't have nearly the basketball fan base and fanaticism that we have up here in Connecticut. So very excited to see a hopefully UConn dominated crew down in Texas as well as in the stadium. But Doug, kind of breaking down these last two games, Arkansas and Gonzaga, a couple things really stuck out to me. Recapping them, I think it starts with double-digit O boards in both games. I thought we really showed out on the glass. I think early in the Arkansas game, you know, you're hearing about how much of a physical, tough, athletic team they are, and we just kind of beat them up a little bit on the offensive glass. Got a lot of second-chance points, which it really breaks the will of the other team when you do that, and obviously helps your offense a lot. In the meantime, I thought, you know, Caravan scoring the first points in both games was very indicative of how he played. Really starting to play like a man here, not like a freshman. Newton playing some great D, hitting some great shots, had two huge charges that he drew. And really, I think it comes down to these last three guys. Hawk just really showing who he is. I think he's the ceiling of this team when he plays like that and he's knocking down those shots. I mean, good luck with the absolute dogs we have in the paint. Speaking of those dogs, Adama playing through the Ramadan fast, 5 assists in the second game, looked like young Jokic out there, loved what Hurley was doing. Mark Few had no idea how to defend that. Hope we see that going forward as teams try to game plan against us. And then lastly, Andre Jackson, man, he's just playing the best version of himself, finding that perfect line between chaotic and kind of slowing down the game. He's just a steady hand, but also absolute lightning in transition when he needs to be, throwing passes around, making things happen, and hitting just enough open threes to really make teams, you know, change how they defend him. Looking at those last two games, Doug, what did you see? What did you like? What did you not like?
I mean, just like you said with Andre, it's like I feel like our best offense has been an Andre Jackson defensive rebound. As soon as he gets the ball in transition, there's just – so many things. He's faster than everyone else on the court. You have Klingon and Sanogo, who was never a lob threat really until this tournament, catching lobs in transition. Or, I mean, you think about the over the head pass to Hawk against St. Mary's that kind of split the game open. When he gets the ball and just gets a full head of steam, he's so much more, I guess, like confident and in control than he was at the beginning of the year. And to your point about like him hitting open threes, it just feels, everything feels more confident. And like, even if he misses one now, you know, the next time he's gonna shoot the second one confidently and or make a decision to drive and get involved. I mean, just everything he's done in this tournament has been unreal. And yeah, what you're saying about the Arkansas game, I mean, getting off to a hot start against them, I think, was huge, because they are a team that wants to like muck it up. And like you said, they're super athletic, not a lot of height. So you kind of bury them early and start hitting open shots. They don't really have the shooting to get back into a game. And then I think we just broke the will of Gonzaga. They just didn't want to be there in the second half. That was just a straight up ass kicking.
It was one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen, to have an Elite Eight game that was that non-competitive in the second half. It was crazy. Mark Few looked lost, and the team, just like you said, they had no idea what to do. No one wanted to shoot. It was just like a wave ran over them, and they had no control over it. And going back to Andre, man, the best thing about him with the ball in fast break transition too is he's obviously not a shooter, but you got a lot of guys around him who are. So whether it's a lob or hitting someone in transition for some of those easy Joey C threes that we love,
yeah,
he gets that thing up in a second. There's just a lot of options. And with the type of D that UConn plays, when you get those easy transition points, man, good luck, because they're just going to keep shooting. They got a lot of guys that can hit shots. They're going to bring Naheem off the bench, Joey C off the bench. They just have a lot of different punches. And I think that's really where I stand with this team now. You know, we talked about Adama as a passer. That's another little wrinkle. I really think this team has the answers to almost any test that they will be given. They can shoot, they can defend, they can rebound at a high level. They have great guard play, not necessarily exactly lead dominant, you know, one person guard play, but kind of shared between Andre taking the ball in the fast break, Newton giving what he can give, you know, Joey C getting some touches, Haas, you know, getting downhill a little bit and trying to create. Between the pieces they have and the way they fit together, this team, I just really have a hard time seeing someone beat us unless we really have an off shooting night. Because even if you get in foul trouble, you know, our bigs get in foul trouble, then you bring Donovan right off the bench. You know, we have a couple wings we can throw at you. We have a lot of guards. We have a lot of guys who can play D and a lot of guys who can hit shots. And I really feel very confident about this team moving forward. But, you know, again, anything can happen this tournament. I was the idiot who bought the tickets for this in the middle of the Gonzaga game, because I assumed Texas would advance and those final four tickets would be very expensive. That did not happen, obviously. So now I'm sitting here, you know, $200 overspent per ticket, but that's just what makes this tournament awesome. I couldn't give less of a shit. I'm sitting in the nosebleeds of a football stadium to watch a basketball game. And I might be the happiest person in the state of Texas when that happens. I think a couple things, just kind of going back to those two games quick. It took Arkansas 6.5 minutes to make a field goal in the second half. That's just crazy. You kind of talked about it. They cannot shoot from deep, and that made them really easy to defend, especially as they got down. And then, you know, we talked about Zags. We really just broke them.
Yeah, I think Gonzaga had – I think Timmy was the only scorer in double digits for the Zags. Could be wrong about that, but I don't – they just – I mean – as soon as they got down, it was like they'd never been in that situation before, and they just like couldn't handle it. I mean, we saw it all over Twitter too, but the comments about like, if Timmy didn't get his fourth foul, it would have been a different game. Just completely ridiculous. You lost by 30 points. That made no difference. And he ended up playing because you were down so much. You just kept him in there. So, I mean, I am nervous for the inevitable close game, and not because of Hurley can't coach in close games, but just because we haven't played one whole tournament. So there's bound to be one, probably. I mean, Miami's a tough matchup. They can play up to four guards at a time. Wong and Pack are both tough shot makers. Wong's super athletic, probably going to the NBA. And they both kind of operate at all three levels, where they'll take threes in transition, take mid-range shots, and go to the hoop. I just think big thing is like guys like Jackson and even Kling and Sanogo staying out of foul trouble, so we can have our best defenders on them for 40 minutes.
I agree. This team's got some scary guards, and kind of looking forward here. You know, I think there's a lot of honestly similarities between Miami and Arkansas in the way they want to play and kind of how they're built. I would say I would describe Miami as a bit like Arkansas, but definitely a lot better outside shooting, which makes them much more dangerous. We just talked about it. Once Arkansas got down, you're playing off them on the 3-point line. It's tough to overcome such a physical team like UConn when they don't have to extend that defense all the way to the 3-point line. Miami is a completely different beast. And kind of going back to your point about the close games, I've been wrestling with this in my head too, because Miami's won, I think almost every one of their games has been very close. Recently, Texas, I think they're down 13 in the second half, 1 point, came storming back. So the whole national narrative is like, oh, Miami knows how to win close games, UConn doesn't. Well, maybe there's another piece of this of UConn is just really fucking good and just hasn't played in a close game. And, I almost hear people kind of holding that against them at this point. But the flip side of it is we've just dominated teams, good teams, to the point that, these things weren't even close halfway through the second half. Looking into Miami, I think one thing I really love to look at is kind of the coaching matchups and the stylistic matchup. I think Hurley versus Muss, we talked about on our previous pod, a very different kind of idea of how to build a team. Muss, hits the portal, wants a new team every year, basically, kind of an NBA model. Hurley, I think, begrudgingly hits the portal and really wants to kind of build, those core guys, that culture, build through freshmen, build through recruiting. And in this one, you look at Larrañaga and Hurley, I think the way these teams play is polar opposite. I mean, UConn is like a militarily drilled set team of just these crisp plays that are well drilled with so many different wrinkles, constant motion, and everyone knows exactly where they need to be on every single kind of part of it. And then you have Miami, which has a lot of skill, a lot of guards, like you said, but at times, it doesn't really look like they're running any type of offense. They're just kind of playing ball, and they got a lot of guys who are really good at it, and it kind of works for them.
Yeah, they play a lot of ISO and they take whatever shots they want. To what you're saying, like Larrañaga, I don't think he gets really that upset with his players taking pull up transition threes. I think we saw Wong take and miss probably three or four against Texas, which ended up not costing him, but easily could have. It's almost like a West Coast offense to give a football comparison. How Miami plays, they're like super loose, and you almost want to like let them play that ISO ball and just bait them into like if you're gonna have one of their guards going one-on-one against Andre Jackson, not getting other people involved, I think we're gonna take that because of our faith in our defensive ability. And I mean, when Klingon's in, we got him back there, backing whoever up, so.
And especially with Klingon, I think such a big part of this is Nordchad Omier is a great big man for them. He's probably their most important player just because of how they play and what he does for them in terms of a flexibility, his ability to run the floor, play the five at 6-7 and rebound at a high level. But you're talking about a team who does not start anyone taller than 6'7". Obviously, Adama is 6'9", kind of a similar build to Nordchad, both very thick, powerful, explosive men. But when you get a guy who's 7'2" in there, and there's really no true center on the other team, that is just a massive mismatch. Something I'm gonna be watching a lot. What does that do for a team, Doug, both on the offensive and defensive end with a size advantage like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think offensively, it doesn't need to change a whole lot for us. The biggest thing we've seen from Klingon, I think, is in transition, like just the being a rim runner and filling the lane with guys like Jackson and even Newton in transition, and being able to just catch a lob if the defense commits to the guy driving the ball is all he needs to do to be effective offensively. And then defensively, it just makes everyone's life so much easier. You can be aggressive on the ball. If guys get by you, you're not as scared. You have one of the best, if not the best, help defender in the country behind you. 7'2" blocking shots, pretty incredible timing for a guy his size. People don't think of him as super athletic, but I mean, he's pretty quick off his feet and reacts very well. Like he's to be able to do what he does at his size and at his age is pretty unheard of. Like, I mean, I guess the closest comparison you'd say Walker Kessler last year at Auburn, but he was also 2 years older, playing as a true freshman and just hitting shots into the stands every game.
I mean, it really is unbelievable to watch him. I think one thing he doesn't get enough credit for is he's made some great passes this year. Obviously, he doesn't play a lot of minutes, so we don't get to see that much of him. But you're talking about a kid who's a 7'2" basketball player, not a guy who's 7'2" trying to play basketball. He just understands the game so well for his age. I love watching him play. Obviously, so excited to keep watching him grow. In that lob you talked about, you know, against a team of this size, it's almost like a Kevin Durant pull up three against a 6'4" guard. It's almost like an unblockable shot because who is going to be able to get up there and stop that lob when you're 6'7" and you're throwing it up to a 7'2" guy? It's really hard to defend in transition.
Yeah, they're gonna struggle with playing. I think they're gonna struggle with Sanogo too. I mean, I feel like I personally take Adama for granted just because he's been probably our most consistent player, but the improvement we've seen from him in the passing and the tournament has been, what did he have, 6 assists last game? Like he's been balling, and to do that after fasting all day, I mean, personally don't know anyone who would be able to not eat for an entire day and then go put up 25 and 10 every game.
No, I mean, I don't eat for 2 hours and I want to fucking punch a hole in the wall. So I had no
Yep.
idea how he does it. I think we all remember that. I believe it was through his legs passed to Andre on the backside to the dunker spot. That was just like a whoa moment. Like Adama's got eyes in the back of his head. Who the hell is this guy? And
Yeah.
watching him grow, man, I'm so happy he gets this publicity on such a national stage, really for all these kids, but him in particular. He's such a good kid. He just wants to win so much. He works his fucking balls off. And, you know, a guy who might not go to the NBA and probably won't go to the NBA by all accounts, but is a truly dominant college basketball big with such a unique game, his touch around the rim, the way he covers pick and rolls and is able to recover after that hard hedge is great to watch. And now you add this little passing ability plus the 3-point shot he added. I mean, this guy started playing basketball when he was what, 15 years old. So the improvement is so exciting to see, and it happens over the course of months, not over the course of years like we're really used to.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see if Miami like completely backs off him and just lets him shoot those threes, because it might be the only way to defend UConn the way we've been playing. So
And but we've also seen him, you know, make those catches in the super high post right into the 3-point line and make some stuff happen. People biting for that pump fake and getting a
yeah.
little spin and getting downhill a little bit. And I mean, he's got a very unique skill set, very unique game to him. And I really, you know, especially, you know, with some of the shooters that they have around him, it's tough to double him. I think he's going to eat Norchad's lunch at times. And I think really kind of the key to this game to me is you got to get that guy in foul trouble, because the guys they bring off the bench are just not nearly as skilled as he is. And you know, if you get their only big in foul trouble, we're a big team as it is. It just makes that height and rebounding advantage that much more.
Yeah, and if we get an offensive rebound against Miami, that they don't get out in transition, and that's how they've come back. That's how they came back against Texas. It's a huge part of their offense, and basically how you have to score if you're going to play with four guards. So if we can offensive rebound and just destroy them in the rebounding battle, I'd hard to imagine how they would score a ton of points, but fingers crossed.
No, I agree. And I think, you know, you kind of hit it right on the head. A little bit of a similar kind of game plan to Arkansas to me. It's, you know, don't let them run, slow it down, beat them in the posts. You start turning the ball over, you start letting them run, you start getting lackadaisical. Indeed, this team will hit their threes and they'll add up quickly. They might not be the best team defensively, kind of similarly to their offensive side. Sometimes it doesn't really look like they know what their system is, or if they're even running any type of system. They're just kind of playing ball, which can make
Yeah.
it tough at times. But you also see, you know, some easy buckets against them as a result. One thing we didn't talk about that I think is just so important this game: Miami only hit two threes against Texas, and they scored 80 something points. That they got, I believe, 18 of 22 from the free throw line, and their star guard Miller, I think. I don't think he missed one. He set some type of field goal record that was last seen with the big Great White Hope from Duke back in the 80s. To me, really, we got to try to not follow him, because that's how they get a lot of points. And especially if they're having an off day shooting, that's one of their only ways they will get points. with a group of guards as athletic as this, and you also kind of have to respect that three, is it really just staying balanced, staying in control to not foul? Any tips or anything we'll see adjustment-wise to really try to cut down on those fouls and giving them easy buckets at the charity stripe?
Yeah, I think there's two main things I would think about is one that when you are playing a small lineup, there's going to be more foul calls because just a small amount of contact from a bigger person to a smaller person is going to look like more contact. Like, I mean, Darvin Ham, the Lakers coach, has caught flack all year for playing Dennis Schroeder 40 minutes a game, who has sucked, but he gets a ton of foul calls and doesn't get a lot of fouls called against him because he's so small. And then defensively, I think it'll come down to if Hurley wants to switch everything and kind of run them off the 3-point line, or if he really wants Jackson and Newton to be dialed into their matchups the whole game. Because usually we've seen Jackson is like, you're going to put him on one guy. But since they have multiple guards who can do a lot of the same things, and potentially we're afraid of them getting into the free throw line and or hitting threes, wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of switching. I also don't really know how effective their big is getting the ball in the post. So if you're worried about switching big to little, that's usually something you think about. But if they're not going to be posting up, which I didn't see too, granted, I've only watched like three or four Miami games this year. I haven't seen them post up too much. It'll be interesting to see how we play that.
Yeah, Norchad, I see a lot of his post buckets come out of, being more athletic than the biggies covering or just kind of overpowering maybe a bad switch in the post. I really don't see them game planning to get him post touches against Adama or definitely against Klingon just because of that size and kind of beef advantage. And I just don't think it's advantageous to them. I think in order for Miami to win, they need to shoot the heck out of the ball from three. They need to create easy buckets out of turnovers, try to run as much as possible, and then just get to the line as much as they can. So if we really lock down on them from three, challenge those shots without fouling, I feel pretty good about this game. But like you said, it's the tournament. We've had no close game so far, and deep down in my gut, just with this Miami team, I will be shitting my pants if it's a 4-point game with 2 minutes left because we just haven't seen this team win that many games in that fashion. Miami has the experience of doing that almost every game up until this point, and you kind of throw all the analytics out the window in those last couple minutes. Guys tighten up, weird shit happens, the sample size is smaller, and that's when a team who, on paper is not nearly as good as UConn can come out with a win.
And just, I guess, one more thing on the defensive matchups is, I think Marquette did this in the Big East tournament, and wouldn't be surprised if Miami tries, because they have so many good guards, is just to attack Hawk early, try and get him in foul trouble. So that's probably number one key that I haven't mentioned, at least. Do not get Hawk in foul trouble, because we've seen how teams can kind of game plan around us when he's out of the game defensively, kind of sag off a little bit more, especially Newton and Aline, and the rest of them are not as consistent as 3-point shooters as him. But yeah.
No, and we've seen Hawk get frustrated early too with, getting a couple fouls, going back to the bench. You can see it in his face and in his body language. It affects him. He wants to be out there. So, if you're Miami, you get him to pick up a couple early ones, it could really throw him off and you might not see him till the second half, which is a big blessing for them. I do think another key in this game we talked about, Miami is not nearly as deep as us. They usually play about seven guys. We have eight and nine deep rotation. I think that's really suited us in a lot of these games and kind of what we talked about with the guard play. Like, yes, we don't have, that dominant lead guard who's going to be handling the ball for 40 minutes a game, but we have just so many pieces off the bench. We really got to give those guys so much credit. I mean, they're playing their roles to perfection. Joey C coming in. I mean, Aline has been unbelievable hitting
Aline has been
shots,
so good. My
K&D.
confidence when him with him shooting an open three now versus the beginning of the year is such a change. I mean, I don't know what happened. It's probably been not just the tournament, but like the last 9 or 10 games where he just figured something out. Maybe he was getting used to his role and playing less minutes, less getting into less of a rhythm than he had previously. But I mean, he has just been hitting open shots. He had a couple of great finishes too last game, just getting to the hoop and aside from Andre, he's probably our best on-ball defender too.
Yeah, he's beefy, man. He gets in front of guys. And that thing you talked about of him going to the rim, you could just see it in the way he plays. He's so much more confident. He's so much more aggressive. The midseason Nahim Ali might have passed up a couple of those tough layup opportunities and just kind of dished it off. He's been such an amazing piece for this team. And I do have to kind of shit on myself here for a sec. I think I did make a comment halfway through the year. I was like, why is he even still on the team? Because he just doesn't play. And when he comes in, he looked lost at times. So, yeah. So much credit to Dan Hurley, this whole coaching staff, getting them. It really just feels like that the engine is just firing on all cylinders right when it needs to be. Everyone knows their role. This team, they just love each other. It's a great group of kids. And I think that's the next thing I just want to talk about, man. You know, UConn loses that first game to Iona. There's a loud group of people on Twitter who are calling for Hurley to be fired. You know, I'm going to be getting calls from my dad, you know, about this guy sucks at coaching. My mom would probably even jump in there too and ask, you know, hey, this guy's not good. We need a new coach. And what Hurley's done and this UConn team's done over the last couple of games is just a big F you to that whole crew. I could not be happier to see it happen. This is a guy who lives and breathes basketball. It's all he cares about. He's given us everything he has to this entire program. And to see him get to this point and really break that ceiling, especially in those first two games, kind of, you know, getting out of the early rounds, it's such a good story. I'm so happy for him, especially looking in the context of, you know, he'll never be as good a coach as his dad, never be as good of a player as his brother. He just has that constant chip. And yeah, I mean, this fucking guy, backwards hat, his weird dragon underwear with his personal washing machine that he brings to games. He deserves it all. And I thought Andre said it best about an hour ago on the field of 68, jumping in. And now that we're kind of here, I don't know if you saw it, but
I haven't heard it yet.
He was talking to Rob Dowster, and she's basically like, you know, there are a lot of assholes on Twitter, the small majority, but there are a lot of assholes, you know, coming at him, you know, the guy who's five trulies deep in the third row from Stratford, who's screaming at him that he sucks, you know, when we're losing to St. John's at home. It's just a great story. And I could not be happier to just really feel good about the guy we got, knowing we're going to have him for a while, and just really watch this whole thing develop. And I mean, we have the number four recruiting class in the country coming in next year. Stephon Castle just keeps rising and rising, it feels like, in draft boards and national media attention. UConn is just in a great place right now, regardless of what happens these next games, for the future and as well as this year.
And I think just Hurley's credibility just continues to rise through the roof with every win in the tournament. I mean, Andre Jackson, prior to the tournament, I don't really think was talking about getting drafted. Everyone was expecting him back at UConn for another year. He mentioned back for 2 years with the COVID year of eligibility. I mean, now some draft boards have him as a second round pick. I hope he doesn't leave. Obviously, we'll see what happens. But I mean, I personally see him as an NBA player. Like, he's like a hybrid of Draymond, Zach LaVine, and Pat Beverly. Like, hyper athlete, really good defender, but makes good passes. Like, if you put him out there with guys like Steph and Clay, I'm sure he can find a role. And then obviously Hawk, who is always probably going to leave and be drafted, is now projected in the lottery on some boards. Like, and even the other guys like Newton and Aline, like, they, sure, they could have gone somewhere else and probably averaged 20, 25 a game and not made the tournament. But there's probably more scouts realistically, just like us, watching these games, and they'll have a chance to play overseas or wherever the situation is. So
no,
happy for the guys and happy for Hurley. He's earned it.
No, I agree. And I love that Draymond comparison, because I think there's definitely some shades of him in his game and just the way he plays, obviously, you know, a lot different, but I like that comp for him. You know,
it's hard to compare him because he's so athletic, but I mean, I just see like the intelligence and like
such a glue guy, so unselfish, egoless on offense, wants to move the ball.
Yep, exactly.
I think one other thing too, we've got to talk about Hawk. You know, I kind of said I really believe that he's the ceiling to this team when he plays at a high level. I mean, like we said, good luck, because we got that inside outside threat combined with the bigs. Doug, how many calories do you think he burns a game? because it's fucking unbelievable. And the guy never slows down. It's crazy.
Yeah. And another testament to why he'll probably be good in the NBA, because that's a good way to get open shots. But it's unbelievable. His motor running off screens. And as someone who played basketball, and I feel like I have pretty good endurance and a good motor, to be able to maintain that when you don't have the ball or you're not covering someone on defense is like true, like just willpower. And like the fact that he just doesn't stop running around. I mean, there's no one worse to cover than that person. Like you'd rather get crossed up all day than have to follow someone off screens for 40 minutes. And he's just fully bought into that. I mean, they probably showed him Rip Hamilton video at the beginning of the year or something, but it's awesome just to see him frustrate people off the ball. And I can't wait for his inevitable foul on a three 10 minutes into the first half and get three free throws.
And it's even more incredible when you pair all that running, and then the second he gets the ball, man, and he gets an inch of space, that thing is going up. I swear you could take a video of every single three he's taken the whole year, and the shooting stroke is exactly the same for every single one. It's crazy, yep, man. It is just, he is a joy to watch.
It's so smooth. And like, it's so repeatable. That's why he's such a good shooter. Like, there's a video comparing like the best shooters to, I hate to call it Russell Westbrook, but just because he's not the best of shooters. His shot is so hard to repeat because he slows down and speeds up and jumps so high on it that like you just can't repeat it. And Hawk is just such a quick release, does the same thing every time. Like you almost, like you said, like he stops on a dime, rises up, the ball's just gone in a third of a second. So.
And you're chasing around for 15 minutes. You might not get the ball once, and then all of a sudden he just buries three right in your face, and your coach is screaming at you, and you're gassed, and you're like, what the fuck just happened to me?
Yeah, you played perfect defense for 15 of 16 minutes, but in that last minute, you just scored 9 points.
Yeah, exactly. And that's such a dream to have on a team where, especially in the last couple of years of Hurley, you know, it felt like they've always really shown up with good mentality on D, good rebounding, able to get stops, but then they just go through stretches without scoring points. So you add in that team defense, that team rebounding, that true dog mentality in the defensive end of the court with a guy who can fill it up that fast. I mean, that's what's made them so dangerous. And that's why I think I'm so high on this team. Kind of looking around to the rest of the bracket here. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but you know, I mean, Texas lost. Creighton lost. Like, we got San Diego State and FAU on the other side. You know, knock on wood, they win this game. It's almost, we talked, I know I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, because about 5 minutes ago I said, no matter what happens, you know, it's been a great season, et cetera, et cetera. But you're playing Miami right now, who I believe they have like the 78th ranked Ken Pom defense in the country. And the other side, you got San Diego State, who cannot score. And FAU, who's a good team on offense, but, you know, struggles playing D with the amount of guards they play. I really have a hard time seeing UConn not hanging another banner this year. And I know, you know, it's tough to say, but that's just where I'm at right now. Am I crazy, Doug?
No, I don't think so. I mean, like you said, trying not to get ahead of ourselves, but the matchups at this point are favorable. So it's hard not to. I mean, I think the only thing that could stop this team is just getting in our own heads and not coming out aggressively, someone getting in foul trouble. Like, it's all the stuff is just like self-correction mistakes. Like, we just need to keep doing what we've been doing. And at this point, I think I'd trust Hurley to make that happen. I know he mentioned at the beginning of the week he had to get on some of the guys, and I have no doubt that he's the type of guy that'll let them enjoy the Final Four for a little bit. And then as soon as he sees people kind of relaxing and not being where he wants them to be, he's going to go right back. I mean, we saw the scowl on his face, like they talked about with him on PMT with 4 minutes left up 30. So we don't have to worry about him bringing the intensity.
No, I agree. I think, you know, the tournament is, it's in their own hands. If they come out, they play their game. You know, I really feel good about it. So excited to get down to Houston. Going to be my second time there. One fun fact about Houston, probably the least walkable city in America. The city limits of Houston, I don't know if you saw it on Twitter. basically fit inside the entire state and take up the entire state of Connecticut. So that's some context there. Going to be a lot different than we're used to. I think it's going to be a lot of Ubers, but excited to get down there, hit some bars, see some UConn fans. And then, you know, if all goes right, you know, Monday night, I'm going to do my best James Harden impression and just go fucking crazy down there.
Hell yeah. Can't wait to get down there. We have a big crew, so it should be fun.
Yes, it should. I can't thank you enough for coming on, Doug.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. So excited to watch these games over the next couple of days, eat some barbecue, drink some Lone Stars and hang out with the boys. And, you know, maybe we'll see Rip Hamilton in a strip club at some point or something cool like that. Go Huskies. I'll talk to you later. And
see you tomorrow. Let's go win a doubleheader.